Good afternoon. Let's call this meeting of the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee to order. The time is 1:02 p.m. Thursday, January 24th. We're in the State Capitol Room.
Room 120. Present, we have Vice Chair Ledoux, Representative Rauscher, Representative Sponholz, Representative Parrish, Representative Sadler, and Representative Reinbold, and myself, Representative Tuck. Also in the audience, we have Representative Eastman has joined us. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to do business. A couple of housekeeping. Please turn your phones off and at least not put them on vibrate. Get them all the way down if you can. It does interfere with our electronic systems and our recording system. I also want to thank Caitlin Ellis, who's with the House Records, and Ben Manley in the back, who is moderating the meeting. And I also want to thank my committee aide, Kendra Kloster. Today we have one bill on the calendar. That's House Bill 2. It's a voluntary employment preference for veterans. Before we start hearing House Bill 2, I do want the committee to know that there are some bills that are coming forward from Commissioner Hummel and her department. Rather than making these all my bills as we run forward, I would like to make these committee bills. And I know that this hasn't been a practice of the past, but the proper way of allowing me to work on these bills and to make them committee bills and introduce them as committee bills is to be granted the authority from the committee. So I would like to have that authority from you guys, if you'd be so willing.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you for that. I would, as a member of the minority representing this committee, I'd like to entertain that invitation and get back to you at a later time.
And entertain the idea? Mm-hmm. Yeah, think about it for a while. Okay. All right. Well, in that case, we'll hold off right now, but I do want to get things drafted. Some of these bills are a little bit complex. They're Title 26 changes. We did a lot of effort last year in making in readjusting the Military Code of Justice, and so we don't want to take too much time, and do want to definitely get things rolling. Okay.
But I guess I would like to make a comment here, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ledoux.
Yes, I remember going through this last year with Representative Sadler and a number of my other colleagues and discussing that this is actually the appropriate way to do a committee bill.
And I just want to say in the past we haven't done this, but this is the proper way of doing it, and I do definitely want to make sure everyone's included. But so it's not a in hopes of coming up with a unanimous decision, we'll hold off doing that at this moment and then giving Representative Sandler time to think about it.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, the next order of business, I would like to take up House Bill 2, Voluntary Employment Preference for Veterans. As sponsor of the bill, I would like to offer some introductory remarks. We will have people online to be able to answer any questions, and they will be given testimony as well. And I want to be mindful of the time that they have, so I will probably take them in a particular order just because they have some other meetings that they have to be at. We have representatives from the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. We have representatives from the Department of Defense and Department of Labor. And of course, testimony online here. Okay, so House Bill 2. What House Bill does is it allows the state of Alaska to use an optional veteran hiring preference that's allowed underneath the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which is Section 11. And Section 11 of the Act is the one that grants us a waiver and being able to have those preferences granted to veterans as long as they are authorized under federal, state, and local law. Currently, we have 37 states that allows this for private employers. Nationwide, all 50 states, including Puerto Rico, Guam, and District of Columbia, allows for this type of preference provisions for public employees. As we know, the road for employment for veterans returning to civilian life can be very difficult. According to a 2012 survey of veterans from all eras, two-thirds of the veterans identified finding a job as the greatest challenge in transitioning. So no matter what deployment that they had over the years, the overall has been two-thirds. As of November last year, 2016, the National Bureau of Labor Statistics showed that the jobless rate for young male veterans between the ages of 18 and 24 still exceed their civilian counterparts in trying to find a job in the private industry. 239,000 veterans compared to 159,000 of those civilian counterparts. And the military discharges about 160,000 active duty service members and approximately 110,000 Reserve and National Guard service members each year. Here in the state of Alaska, according to the Defense Manpower Data Center, with the 2015 data, we have 2,000 military personnel returning. Alaska is home to the highest number of veterans per capita. We have prided ourselves in being a leader in supporting our veterans and our active duty members. Alaska is also home to some of the great businesses who are willing and able to assist our veterans in their employment endeavors. So it is time to extend the opportunity for employers in the private sector to adopt a veteran hiring preference policies if they so choose. House Bill 2 is supported by the Department of Defense, who has been working with this issue across the nation. In addition, we have support from the National Federation of Independent Businesses, Alaska, and employer support of the Guard and the Reserve. And with that, I think I will turn it over to my staff to go over the section analysis. Is there any discussion at this point? Okay.
Sorry, just getting organized.
That's all right.
For the record, Kendra Kloster, staff to Representative Chris Tuck. As you can see, if you've got the bill in front of you, we have a bill that's 2 pages long, so two sections. This clarifies that nothing in AS 1880, it's a chapter which is protecting persons from various types of unlawful discrimination, is intended to prohibit a private employer from granting an employment preference. So basically what this bill says, that if the private employer would like to offer this preference, that they may do this. It is not a requirement, but is a voluntary option that we are allowing. As Representative Tuck mentioned, that 50 states do this for public employees, 37 states now do this for private employers, and it's just allowing this option. I have additional people online who I've been working with, and that's Mark Sansusi with the Department of Defense, who has put this on their list of being a top priority to pass this year. This bill actually was introduced last year and had passed through the House, and we are bringing it back again. So if you have additional questions, we also have them online, and Verdi Bowen with Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and the Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole as well.
Any questions for Kendra? Okay, just we do have Bob Dole with the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. He's a Deputy Commissioner. He's online for any questions. We also have Steve Williams and James Harvey, as mentioned earlier, and Mark Sansusi, Verdi Bowen. So with that, I would like to open up for public testimony. And the first person I would like to call on is at the Anchorage LIO, and that is Patty Wilbanks. Patty, are you available?
Good afternoon. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, if you don't mind, please state your name and your affiliation for the record.
I will. My name is Patty Wilbanks, and I am a retired colonel out of the Alaska National Guard. In addition to that, I have a certification in professional human resource management. So this bill actually is something that I was very interested in and have been following it, so I felt inclined to come up and talk to everybody, but more importantly, my husband and I also own a small business here in Anchorage. So from my perspective, you pretty much know the stats that 37 other states already provide this. The fact that Alaska didn't provide it was something that I had actually looked at before and wondered why, because it is a great benefit to our veterans as they're coming out. Even more so now that we're looking at some federal hiring freezes, they're going to need it for the private employers. When I, so as I put on my, you know, old colonel hat, I look at it and I really want to see these young men and these young women coming out of the military being able to get a step up. It does show to them that the community, as well as the state and the United States, is supporting them. But more importantly, there is that benefit, but there's also a benefit to the employer that, my husband and I look at hiring people. I'm continually wanting to reach out to the veteran side of the house. But, you know, as an HR, I start to get worried about, well, I don't want to be in a position where I'm playing favorites or privileges to one group. This will allow us to do that and be able to look at them if we choose to do so. If we choose not to, that's probably the best part that I like about it, is that we don't, you don't have to. So there really is no harm, but it does show a great benefit to the veterans coming out of active duty and out of the Guard.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Womack, appreciate your testifying in this. You say you and your husband have a small business, so curious to find out what kind of small business that is and what kind of hiring you do.
We are a very small business. We have three or four employees, and it is a book business, electronic book business in Alaska, where we install electronic communications and a whole bunch of other stuff on the
book. Through the chair, Ms. Womack, I'm afraid that Your voice came through a little bit electronic, a little digital. Could you maybe get closer to your phone or speak a little more slowly so I could understand more clearly what kind of business you have?
Right. Is this better?
It is better. Not too close, but a little closer is better. Thank you.
Okay. My husband and I own a small business here in Anchorage, and we support Whittier and Seward, and it's an electronic boat business called Polar Marine Alaska, where we install radar systems, electronic systems for boats. And right now we have just started up where we're getting ready to rehire some people for the summer. As you can imagine, during the summer is when we push very hard. And this is one area with the veterans that, as I'm trying to help him, I would like to have that flexibility as an employer. If I want to hire veterans' preferences, I can.
Okay. And a follow-up?
A follow-up, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Ms. Wilcox. And just, have you had situations where you wanted to hire a veteran but could not in the absence of this bill?
No, not at the present moment, because we are fairly new. We've only been in business for about 3 years now. And prior to that, I just retired this year out of the Guard. So I have not had the opportunity to get too involved in the hiring practices. But I could see where I would want to do this as we're hiring and reaching out to the veterans groups.
Thank you. Any further questions, comments? Well, thank you very much, Patty, for your testimony.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too. Next, Bob Dole with the Department of Military Veterans Affairs, their Deputy Commissioner. Bob, are you online?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I am. For the record, this is Bob Dole, Deputy Commissioner of the State of Alaska, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Mr. Verdi Bowen is also online, our Director of the Office of Veterans Affairs. He will lay out the specific reasons our department endorses or supports this bill. I would offer one other important principle, and that's called the Gander Rule. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. And in this case, this bill would remove a limitation on private employers on an optional basis that are not on public employers, i.e. the ability to create a veterans preference hiring program. And again, I believe Bertie Bowen is online, who will go into the greater substantive reasons we support this.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Ledoux.
So I'm just curious. As long as an employer isn't discriminating on the basis of race or other protected category, can't the employer just always hire who he wants to hire?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, it is our understanding in researching this last year that there were cases where it was found that you could not create a special case law in other states and employment law recognized that you could not create a special category or hiring preference based on a veteran's affiliation or without specific authority.
And may I add, and I got the Department of Labor here with us as well, that I believe that you can actually advertise for veterans if you so desired. I think this bill will allow you to do that. Is that correct? If you guys don't mind putting yourself on the record and giving a verbal answer.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Stephen Williams. I'm an Employment Security Analyst 3 with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development, and I currently serve as the statewide Veterans Coordinator overseeing the veteran services at our Alaska Job Centers. And to answer your question, yes, sir, that is correct, Mr. Representative, that employers can advertise that they encourage veterans to apply, but that's as far as we have traditionally advocated that they go, so that they don't violate any laws.
Okay, thank you. Representative Ledoux.
So if an employer simply puts out an advertisement that said, I prefer veterans, and then they institute such a hiring practice, would you guys prosecute them?
Through the chair, Madam Representative, we would not prosecute. My office provides employment assistance, but we do not, as far as the Veterans Services goes, I do not enforce regulations or policies like that.
Could I have a follow-up?
Follow-up.
Is there anybody who would?
Through the chair, I do not know. I cannot answer that this time, but I can do some research and get back to you.
Thank you.
All right.
This also protects the employer from any civil suits that may come forward. Representative Parrish.
The civil suits answers my question. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Assistant Commissioner Dole or Bob, appreciate hearing clearly the department's position in support of this bill. Just curious, is the department going to be expressing its view on all bills that come before this committee, or is this a special case, and if so, why is this a special case?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, we will we analyze each bill individually for the merits to determine whether or not we believe it's appropriate to express support and get governor's office approval also before speaking. But we analyze each bill independently, Representative.
And follow up.
Follow up.
And so your support is predicated on that analysis. So you think that when bills are worth your support, that they meet some threshold that you will support them in testimony, is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that's correct. Based on our analysis of this bill, we think it's worthy of support.
Okay, thank you.
Any other further questions, comments? Well, thank you very much, Deputy Commissioner, for your testimony. Next, I would like to take it to Washington State. Yes.
Mr. Chair, were you going to go to Verdi Bowen or? I think Bob was teaming up Verdi Bowen.
We will get to Verdi right after we get to Mark Sansucci. So, thank you. Next on our list of testimony, those wishing to testify, is Mark Sansucci from the Department of Defense. Mark, are you available?
Yes, I am. Honorable Chair and Leader Tuck and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to provide information and ask for your support for HB2. I've been listening intently, and I don't want to be redundant, and I only want to add value. But first, I guess, my name is Mark Sansucci, a retired Air Force officer, presently the Department of Defense Regional State Liaison for the Northwestern States, working for the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Military Community Family Policy. The outline of the bill from Chair Tuck and from Kendra pretty much spelled out what it was and gave you some data on unemployment for civilians. We know that 2004 people separated from active reserve and National Guard duty and called Alaska home last year. They're coming back. with skill sets that were already paid for by all of us paying for our federal tax dollars to make them people you want to hire. Even though this is like the third year for the Department of Defense on this issue, it's even been longer for the NCSL, the National Conference of State Legislators, and I know that Representative Sadler sits on the Military and Veterans Task Force, so this is certainly not new to anyone. And also, we know that it passed 40-0 last year in the House, and just kind of hope and appreciate you bringing it forward. 37 states are doing it now in New York and Alaska, and a couple of others I'm checking into have bills this session. So I stand by for questions. I just want to add some value and appreciate your support, and thank you for taking it up so early. Thank you.
Any questions from committee members? Thank you very much, Mark. If you don't mind hanging out in case we have some further questions down the road.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much. Also to testify is Verdi Bowen, Director of Veterans Affairs. Verdi, are you available?
Yes, I am, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the House Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs, my name is Verdi Bowen. I am the Director of the Office of Veterans Affairs. My job is to help 74,000 veterans in Alaska and their 150,000 dependents understand and secure the benefits they have earned through service to our nation and our great state of Alaska. I want to personally thank each of you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2 today. The Department operates a number of programs to help veterans re-enter civilian life and find meaningful employment for after military service. We support all efforts to help not only veterans make successful military to civilian transitions, but to help members serving in our National Guard and Reserve components maintain financially adequate and personal fulfilling jobs. We help them find employers who support their military responsibilities, such as accommodating regular drill weekends, annual training, and federal activations. If passed, House Bill 2 would be a useful tool in the pursuit of smooth transitions for military to civilian life and would allow employers to preferentially hire veterans in order to take advantage of their technical, vocational, academic, leadership skills attained while serving our nation. Veterans are desirable employees by virtue of their real-life experiences, maturity, sense of teamwork, loyalty, dedication to public service, civic-mindedness, development through their service. This bill will allow employers to find and hire employees who will be steadily reliable workers and who will best serve those who hire them. My office does not anticipate a fiscal impact as a result of House Bill 2, other than the positive effects of facilitating employers in hiring our workforce. We also anticipate no impact on private sector employers as well. House Bill 2 defines veterans as a person who was honorably discharged from service in the Armed Forces of the United States, a reserve unit of the Armed Forces of the United States, the Alaska Territorial Guard, the Alaska Army National Guard, the Alaska International Guard, or the Alaska Naval Militia. We understand the sponsor is considering an amendment to extend the ability of employers to grant voluntary employment preference to personnel actively serving in good standing in the Guard and Reserve components. Our traditional Guard and Reserve components who are employed in our local communities possess the same qualifications and offer employers the same advantages as veterans. My office and the department approve of the concept of offering these service members preferential hiring by employers who wish to take advantage of this benefit. We have one issue with the existing statute regarding equality in providing the preference. The reserve component does not have a set time of service, but our National Guard does. Under Alaska Statute 3925.125F3, it states, members of the National Guard means a person who is presently serving as a member of the National Guard who has at least 8 years of service in the Alaska National Guard. This reflects a member must have served 8 years before receiving the benefit under this bill. We suggest Alaska Statute 3925.159 should read, member of the National Guard means a person who is presently serving under honorable conditions or has been released under the same condition while serving the Alaska National Guard. This simple change will give those who serve in our National Guard and Reserve components the same access to the same benefit. Further, we believe our members of the Alaska State Defense Force possess many of the same qualities and skills as veterans and members of the Guard and Reserve components, and represent a pool of attractive employees as well. And employers are inclined to selectively hire people with military training and teamwork experience. We believe it makes sense to allow them to extend hiring preference to members of veterans of the Alaska State Defense Force. While the Alaska State Defense Force does not issue discharge documents the same way active components do today, they do have means of documenting service and identifying members in good standing. In conclusion, we believe House Bill 2 offers another way to smooth transition from active duty service to civilian life, help maintain strong employer-employee relationships for the National Guard and Reserve components, add strength to and pride to the Alaska State Defense Force, and serve the needs of the Alaska employers at the same time. The NVA and the Office of Veterans Affairs fully supports House Bill 2. Further supporting the benefits of this bill is a letter from Craig Campbell, the Alaska State Chair of the Employer Support for Guard and Reserve. I know that each of you have a copy right now, and ESGR is a Department of Defense program established in 1972 to promote cooperation, understanding between the reserve component service members and their civilian employers to assist in the resolution of conflicts arising from employees under military commitments. ESGR understands the unique talents and skills Guard and Reserve service members can bring to the civilian workforce, and that also is stipulated in that letter. And at this time, if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer anything that you have.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Rauscher.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Chair. Through the Chair, I was wondering, this bill, written for a reason, the statistics out there on this occurring, are there a lot of them? In other words, has this happened and reoccurred over and over? And I guess it follows along with what Representative Ledoux was talking about as far as, if an employer was to utilize this as an employee, an employment to keep the veteran hired, and I know that we don't know yet whether some other agency might have a problem with that, but are there many cases out there, repetitive or more across the states or anywhere, that have given a lot of calling for this bill, I guess is what I'm saying.
Through the chair to Representative, currently today I have not seen anything where an employer has not or has gotten into trouble or a veteran has not received a job because this bill's not in place. But then again, if this bill was in place, I believe that we would see a higher increase of employment in fairly highly skilled jobs.
Through the chair?
Yes, follow up.
So basically, this is these are some of the tools in your bag if you'd like to continue to work with the veterans. And basically what we're doing here is, in my opinion, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
That is correct. That's what we're doing. We're adding more tools to the employer's bag to hire more qualified people.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair. It was mentioned that in, I believe it was 39 other states, similar legislation has already been passed. Have we had any, is there any way of extracting the effect in those states? Have we, in fact, seen a decrease in veteran unemployment relative to unemployment in the similar age cohort? As contrasted with states which have not extended this protection to employers.
Would you like to?
Through the chair, to the representative, currently right now the other states, as far as I know, that it would be difficult for that simply because of the number of employees that are offering this this preference. We don't know which states have either 100% or 50% or 40% of their civilian workforce providing this or commercial workforce providing this preference. So it would be a rough number to actually get, or actually it would be hard to quantify that number to something that would be a true concise figure of what is really out there.
Follow up? Well, you don't have to burn up the man hours running down the information. I see it as extending a protection to employers to allow them to have this preference and to forestall the threat of future lawsuits. So I thank you for your testimony.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to ask really the same general question. We're seeing the questions seem to be going to how much have veterans' preferences moved the needle? We do have some evidence, I suspect, of how that's worked in government. But I know that civil service hiring practices rely more on objective criterion, tests and scores and that kind of stuff. Private employer hiring is much more subjective necessarily. So I would be curious to know either from Mr. Sanssouci or Steve Williams, if you might know the answer, anybody who can say to what degree have private veteran preference laws moved the needle on veteran hiring. Whoever wants to take a whack at it.
Okay, Mr. Sanssouci, are you still with us?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, we don't have data like that, and I'm thinking out loud that it's almost impossible to know whether it's been able to move the needle or not. And again, going back to NCSL and the Military Veterans Task Force, the genesis of this issue came from NCSL, and I know that Walmart and other corporate people have been behind this. So I don't have an answer to your question, except it seems like it would be very hard to empirically be able to show a relationship. I think as Mr. Bowen just said, it's as much a protective stance as anything else. So that's about the best I can do, Mr. Chair. Representative Sadler.
Follow up, Mr. Sadler.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mark. Yeah, it's kind of hard to prove a negative. I understand that. But so I generally support this. I support it in the task force. Veteran hiring preferences. I sponsored a bill to get a veteran member of the Alaska Workforce Development Council, and I believe I supported this bill when it came before us in a different version previously. I'm just curious, as we extend this from this preference from public employers to private employers, what the effectiveness is going to be. And I guess I would ask the question of Verdi, which, in your view of the Alaska economy and hiring practices, Mr. Bowen, which sector of the economy is this likely to have the most effect in hiring, in private employee hiring?
Through the chair to Representative Sadler, I believe that where this would probably have the most effective impact on hiring would probably be in the oil fields, simply because of the fact that there are certain small companies up there that would like to offer a veterans preference, but they're unable to at this time. And I have seen this several times in the past, and we're really blessed here in my office because ESGR's office is actually housed here. Currently right now the slot is vacated, but we do see the employers that come in and out of here sometimes daily seeking assistance through the ESGR program, and I do know that most of them would offer this preference if they were allowed to under the law.
Very good. ESGR is a good organization. I've been to many of their events, and would be pleased if there were lots of hiring in the oil field to allow this preference to be taken advantage of. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sadler. Representative Rauscher.
To the chair, just a point of understanding of procedure, because I don't understand all procedures yet. I do have a motion for, I guess, some structure within the bill itself and a few wording. And I don't know whether that should be introduced and talk about while we still have people in the room in the LIO that might be able to answer those questions, or whether I should wait till later. I don't understand which way that should go, and I just want some clarification on that.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. So it's the chair's intent that we take up public testimony today, and that we hold off on any amendments until the next time we bring the bill up, so we have an opportunity to work on those amendments. But if you do have something in mind right now that you would like to ask people, I would allow you the ability to do so.
Okay, so the concerns that I brought up in the memo are roughly definitions on veteran and honorable discharge and general discharge, and the way they're structured inside the actual bill itself. And I was just wondering if I wanted to clear up those, but if you'd rather I do that at the next juncture, I appreciate that, and I will hold off on that questioning.
Okay, thank you, Representative Rauscher. So what I'd like to do is just get through public testimony.
Okay.
We're going to have people still here to answer any questions, so under discussion, if you don't mind holding your question until after public testimony. So we'll address that today.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions for Verdi Bowen? Verdi, thank you very much. Next is Russell Ball. Russ, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, if you will, speak close to your microphone, not too close, but so we can hear you a little bit faint. Go ahead and proceed. Put your name and affiliation on the record for us, please.
Sure. My name is Russell Ball, and I'm a small business owner here in Anchorage.
Go ahead, proceed.
So I wanted to call in today in support of the bill, and I've had the opportunity to listen to some of the testimony and comments earlier. And I've been a small business and an employer for over 30 years at this point. And any time we start talking about preference in a hiring process, as a small business owner, the hairs on the back of my neck kind of start going up. The risk for us really comes from a civil lawsuit from the people that didn't get the job. And but yet, when we're going out into the marketplace and we're looking to try to do recruitment, veterans actually have made up some of my best employees over the years. They're disciplined. They're trained. In my experience, they're very good at troubleshooting and breaking things down logically, and they just make for a good pool to recruit new employees from. And so for us, it's really being able to attract them to get a resume into us for consideration. And I think that this transition issue from military to private, and some of the people that I know, it's a big, scary transition. And what better way of, getting them to break through that by them understanding that an employer has specifically advertised and is recruiting based upon this preference. But I'll tell you that as a small employer, in a small business, small employer, I would never put a preference out there in any of our recruitment in fear of, the civil lawsuits that could attach themselves to that, unless it was protected, something protected via this law or something similar. And so we do, I see it as a big win for the state. We want to hold the best talent in the state. I'd like to have that talent here to be able to pull from as my system grows. And I also think that it's a way of sending a thank you to the people that have served. We're able to put that out there and say that we do have a preference program. And it is partly a way of saying, we not only value you and your skills, but it is also a way of saying thank you for your service. And so those are the comments that I wanted to add just listening to some of the testimony.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions from committee members? Seeing no questions, thank you very much, Mr. Ball, for your testimony. Next to testify is Dave Domino. Dave, are you online?
Yes.
Okay, if you don't mind, state your name and your affiliation for the record.
My name is David Domino, D-E-M-E-N-N-O. I am the owner of Alaska Land Clearing.
Thank you very much. Feel free to proceed.
say I just wanted to give my opinion and support to the bill number two. And currently I've got three veterans working for me now. And what I've found is the military does a really good job of developing job skills, life skills, you know, that they can use later on in the private workplace. From the veterans compared to some of the other guys, they're always on time. They're ready to take charge. If they don't understand something, they'll ask questions. They're ready to work. They usually pick up what we do fast. We run lots of heavy equipment, and you go tell them to do this or that with it, and usually they will get the project done. They're also real good at working independently, so they don't need a big group of guys. If the task that they need to do is can be done by one, they can do it. You know, and what I've found is the guys that I've got working for me that came from the military, their leadership skills are superior to a lot of the workplace. You know, they, like I said, they have good leadership skills. They take pride in their work. And so I try to do anything I can do when a vet comes in to hire them because they're an asset for our company. We've also done a couple of projects on Fort Richardson where we went out with a whole battalion of guys with their bulldozers and we helped them do a task, and they've asked us to go in and train some of these guys. And from what I was, the guys that I was working from, I think I worked with eight guys with D8 bulldozers, the guys picked up on it really well. And our little program was a success, although it was short, you know. It was a good success. We taught the military guys something, and they all have a chance to come to work for me when they're done, you know, if they choose to go into private life. So I just, I think anything we can do to get the vets hired on nationwide is a really good. It's really good, and it'll benefit the state of Alaska, I believe, greatly.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments from any committee members? Thank you very much for the testimony, Dave. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Is there any other further testimony here in the chambers or here in the committee room that would like to testify? Okay, seeing no further testimony, I'm going to go ahead and close public testimony. And with that, Representative Rauscher, if you don't mind sharing your questions and concerns.
Appreciate that very much, Chair. With Chair's permission, I have just a couple of instances within the bill itself where general discharge appears in statute AS 21.10.08C and AS 38.05.940B. The phrase is used general discharge under honorable discharge conditions. And I just kind of, should we, I've got actually, I've been wanting to put in an amendment there to collaborate all three of them to be the exact language. If we're talking about the exact same thing, if we're not talking about the back same thing, then I'd just like to understand what we're talking about.
Okay, thank you very much. Hang on real quick. Bob Dole, are you still online with us?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, Mr. Chairman, I am. I would like to defer this one to Verdi, who day in and day out, though, sees the effects of different types of discharges and what that can potentially do to veterans' benefits if he is still online.
Thank you very much. Verdi Bowen, are you still online?
Yes, I am. And through the chair, to Representative Rauscher, the wording should be under honorable conditions because that covers general and honorable discharges. That way there, you're not differentiating between either one. And that will open up the veteran to all the benefits that there is out there, especially within the federal side of the VA.
Representative Rauscher.
Through the chair, for further clarification here, in all three instances, utilizing the same language?
Through the chair, to Reverend Rauscher, yes.
Representative Sadler, and then Representative Ledoux afterwards. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And following up on Representative Rauscher's question, so Verdi, are you saying you think we should make consistent the language in AS 3630-321? I give you the line citation. F3B, it says a veteran is someone who is separated from service under condition that was not dishonorable. Do you think that should be changed to reflect other than dishonorable? Do you think that needs to be consistentized?
We could actually change it. Now, read that again. Excuse me, through the chair, could you read that again?
Sure. This is AS 3630-321 F3B. And it's a service under a condition that was not dishonorable. And this is kind of difficult because it's a double negative, but while I think the language of the bill before us talks about honorably discharged, you and I know that there is other than honorable, which includes general, but not every discharge is either honorable or dishonorable. A discharge can be general and still not be dishonorable. I would not want to be the committee secretary in this one.
Well, through the chair, other than, to back to Representative Sadler, other than, when they use the term other than dishonorable, that is a term that the VA uses, or the actual, the federal government uses to establish benefits because they do that individually. But in this case where we're trying to establish a benefit that would be only reserved for those people that have been satisfactorily discharged from the military, the best way to do that would be under honorable conditions, which covers general discharge and it covers honorable discharge, because that is what is stated in the subject line on the DD Form 214 and in the subject line on the National Guard Bureau Form 52.
So to, I think I'm going to
follow up, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Father. So you recommend that we do change that subparagraph B in 3630-321 to reflect other than dishonorable, to be consistent with that language?
Yes, sir. I would, through the chair, I would state other than that all discharges that are reflective that are other than honorable. It's, I'm sorry, not other than honorable, it's under honorable conditions is the term that you want to use. Because under honorable conditions covers general and covers honorable discharge.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you want to try and expand your bill to remedy that one right there. But
Yeah, we sure will. And Representative Rauscher brought it to our attention prior to the meeting. So, Representative Ledoux.
Well, I might or might not have a problem with this. So, could somebody tell me what sort of circumstances a person might be discharged with a general discharge as opposed to an honorable discharge?
Through the chair to Representative Ledoux, yes. And this sounds, sometimes things happen within, and I'm using this as an example. I was, and this is a long story, but I was noticing that the Army is now changing its PT standards. If the PT standards today is for 50 push-ups for a male between the ages of 18 and 24, but next week the standards are 74 and you have an individual that can't meet 74, they would be released for non-compliance with a general discharge.
Interesting.
Under honorable conditions. And that's sad because sometimes things happen like that that are outside of the member's control that they might, that the Department of Defense uses it as a force reduction indicator and some people get caught in that umbrella.
Follow up, Representative Ledoux.
So this seems like a very benign example, and so I guess it's probably above our pay grades here to make that an honorable discharge. Are there other things that might not seem so benevolent that would cause somebody to receive a general discharge as opposed to an honorable discharge? I mean, I've always thought this was kind of a big deal.
And before you answer, if you don't mind, state your name and affiliation for the record again.
Yes, this is Verdi Bowen, the Director of Veterans Affairs, and through the chair to Representative. Generally, a general discharge could be for a number of things. It could be for not passing a test, a skill level test. Could be for not performing well on their PT test. It could be for weight standards. It could be actually for minor drug offenses, DUI, speeding tickets on a military installation, late to formation, or to a deployment. There's a gamut of things that would allow a veteran to receive, an active duty member to receive a general discharge on their way out of the military.
And follow up again, Representative Dew.
So if we were to go with that amendment, would an employer realize whether he was hiring somebody with an honorable discharge or a general discharge? Because if I were an employer, that might very well be important to me.
Through the chair, Representative, the employer, when they look at the discharge form, it's stipulated on the bottom of the form the reason for the discharge. They can, it says under honorable conditions, and then it states either general or it says honorable is the release. And then if there's anything else under that line, there's usually a reference point or a remark section that stipulates what, if it was something that had happened, whether it was a weight failure or whether it was missed formations, it'll stipulate that in that block down there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Reinbold.
Thank you, Chairman Tuck. Basically what my... I want to respond a little bit to the public testimony and make sure that we get this on record. This is an act relating to a voluntary preference for veterans by private, and Section 1, Line 3, it said this bill is intended to not prohibit. However, it does not mandate, and I think it's really important, and I appreciate it. I'm not a big fan of government mandates, and this bill is a voluntary, but it's not a mandate.
Thank you very much for that. Any further questions or comments? Representative Sadler.
I've got a couple questions for you as sponsor, Mr. Chair. First one would be, I understand that first of all, I guess it would be for Mr. Bowen, does the phrase the Armed Services of the United States on page 1, line 7, does that include National Guardsmen of any state?
And that's for
Verdi.
Verdi Bowen, if you don't mind putting your name and affiliation on record again.
This is Verdi Bowen, the Director of Veterans Affairs for the State of Alaska. Through the chair, back to Representative Sadler, I don't know the answer to that question, but I can get that answer for you.
Thank you. I'd like to know that because that pertains to my follow-up question, Mr. Chair. I do see some specific calls for the Alaska Army National Guard and the Alaska Air National Guard. I just want to find out, because what we do is parse jots and tittles here, if there is someone who had service in the Arizona National Guard and then moved to Alaska and wanted to avail themselves of this veteran preference in a private employer situation, would the same status qualification of veteran service in the other National Guard apply in the same way your proposal to have honorable conditions of service in the Alaska National Guard apply? That's for the
actually it's for the sponsor. So this is Representative Tuck. Yes, we will take a look at that. One of the things that we may want to do too, based on testimony that we heard today, is expand this to active National Guards people as well. So we'll look at both those options. And if you don't mind, Representative Sadler, do you have a preference?
Actually, at this point, no, I won't express your preference, but I know you're calling out Alaska Territorial Guard and National Guard and so forth, and if you did want to limit that to those who had served in the Alaska National Guard, then that's important to clarify that, I think. Okay. Because we have a lot of folks come from Puerto Rico and from Arizona and California who get new guard slots here, and they might not have gotten their full 8 years, but there's just all kinds of conditions.
Sure, if you don't mind, if I'm going to allow Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole to respond if he has a response for that.
Mr. Chair, Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole, State of Alaska, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. I didn't parse it in light of the concern raised by Representative Sadler. Normally, though, in looking at the language, we interpreted it as a guardsman serving pursuant to Title 32 of the United States Code, looking at that federal status. And I believe that would encompass guard service in other states. There is the question that, about whether or not that 8-year term or how that fits in there, I think, is a separate discussion. But we would see it National Guard service pursuant to Title 32 United States Code in any of the 54 states and territories.
Any further questions? Representative Ledoux.
Well, I guess I'm kind of confused about that, how you would interpret it. As including that when it's specifically talking about Alaska, 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 and the bill doesn't talk in terms of veteran including somebody who was discharged from those following services. So it's kind of confusing to me how you would transpose Alaska to mean that they were a member of any National Guard unit.
And just real quick, as Representative Tuck, I believe that Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole was responding to a potential amendment to allow National Guardsmen on there, and that he was just stating the language that we would have to allow them to do that. Am I correct in that,
Deputy Commissioner? That's correct, Representative Tuck. Thank you.
So we'll make sure that we get that language correct before offering an amendment. Any other further questions or discussion? All righty. Okay, so it is my policy, as we have bills hit this committee, to have at least two hearings on each bill. I don't think it's a proper process just to rush things through. So my office will be working with the department and with members here in the committee to address the issues that we just discussed here at this committee. And I plan on bringing this bill back to committee sometime next week. So currently we'll put House Bill 2 to this side. Our next hearing will be Thursday, January 26th, to hear House Bill 3, which is a National Guard leave reemployment rights. I also want to note that the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs Subcommittee will meet on Thursday at 12:30, just prior to that to 1:30 on Thursday, January 26th. So this actual committee officially will be meeting at 1:30. And with that, Representative Sadler.
Thank you for that last point, Mr. Chair. Could you, for the record, let us know who is going to be the finance member serving as the chair of that subcommittee?
Yes, that is Representative Kawasaki.
Okay, and will there be another member of the minority appointed to this committee for subcommittee purposes?
There are no official subcommittee members, and so there will not be any alternates assigned to the subcommittee. However, I just want to encourage that or remind everybody that anyone can attend the budget subcommittee portion of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and we actually hope that people will give comment. Representative Rambo.
I'm sorry, could you restate there's no members, official members?
Right, so the budget subcommittee is going to be any member of the House, but primarily with the committee members that are here on this committee. So we will be tackling the budget for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs as a committee.
Do you mind if I ask a follow-up?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, because I'm trying to figure this new procedure out. So how, if we wanted to put an amendment forth, who are the voting members, and how do we do an amendment?
Okay, so amendment will be the voting members of this committee, including for better lack of a better word, budget subcommittee chair, Representative Kawasaki. And just like we have done it in the past, you can go ahead and have your amendments ready. And remember that as we move our recommendations to the full finance committee, that those are only recommendations. It's not like a binding legal vote. So those are recommendations, and we will be taking recommendations for that. Now, I'm speaking on behalf of the budget subcommittee chair, but I'm pretty sure every committee is going to be operating the same way. Representative Rauscher.
So for a point of clarification for myself, I don't know about others, can you be late, tardy, or absent from a committee that has 40 people in it?
You can be late, tardy, absent of any committee. It's up to you, you know.
But I mean, who is
late, tardy, absent? We're not going to put a call in the committee and have the sergeant of arms come grab you.
I guess who is late, tardy, or absent, I guess, is what I should have said.
Well, we will still. Okay. I'm going to call just a brief at ease. I misspoke earlier. I apologize. I now understand your question. Not everyone is a member of the committee, but all members are encouraged to participate if they have an interest in Departmental Terry Merchants Affairs.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Reinbold.
And I'm sorry. I'm really trying to understand this. So if we propose an amendment, what happens with that amendment? Do we not vote on it? Or?
Yes, there would be a vote, but just remember, our budget subcommittees aren't really official committees, nor they have been in the past. So it's always up to the chair whether or not they wanted to adopt and accept amendments. For the purposes of this committee, my understanding is that we will take amendments. So I know this has been controversial in the past, where people were upset because they were not allowed amendments. We heard floor speeches last year because people were not allowed amendments to the budget subcommittee process, but those aren't official actions. Those are recommendations to the full finance committee. So in passage of a amendment does not necessarily mean that it is in the operational budget. I just make that very clear. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said that there will be the chairman of the subcommittee will be Representative Kawasaki. Will he be able to vote on amendments in subcommittee?
My understanding is that he will.
But there's no member of the minority finance committee who's going to be appointed to this committee?
Representative Sadler and Representative Reinbold will be part of the committee.
But are there any additional members? In the same manner as which Representative Kawasaki is an additional majority member of this committee, will there be an additional minority member of this committee?
That's a very good question. This is a new process. I will have to get back with you on that, Representative Sadler, because we definitely want to have an odd number of votes to be able to adopt, to make recommendations.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Ledoux.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure and clarify this. There's no actual amendments. It's simply recommendations.
It's simply recommendations. I see a lot of confused looks out there, but yes, it is the budget subcommittee process historically has always been recommendations. We're not changing that. It is going to be recommendations, but just as a purpose of passing on those recommendations, we will take amendments. All right. Any further questions? All right. Well, this committee will stand adjourned at 2:05 p.m. Thank you very much.